Right, that's what I'm gonna have to do.
Is that like the backup?
There you go.
Right, play and record.
Is that on?
That one's on.
Isn't it terrible when you listen to a tape and it starts with someone saying, "Is that on?" It's like, have they no confidence? It's like, when you listen to a tape of a meeting and someone goes, "Is that on?" Oh, it's April 12th at 6 p.m. on the dot, and this is collective bargaining at the University of Central Florida with the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the University of Central Florida Chapter of the United Faculty of Florida. And I have, for everyone's review, a copy of the session minutes from March 22nd, 2018.
Minutes look fine to us.
The minutes look okay with me, too. Any observations?
No observations from me.
All right, well, the minutes are accepted. So, John, where do you want to start tonight?
Well, I thought we'd maybe start with some sort of housekeeping things.
Good.
So our last meeting date we set was May 3rd.
Okay.
And I don't know if I saw I had an email from Charlie. Mm-hmm. We'd sent some suggested dates or times at least.
Yes.
And I think maybe Charlie had replied to me. Let's see what she said. Ah, okay. So you guys suggested some dates.
Do I have to caucus on this anyway? Was this sweet? Wait on those.
Yeah, we'll just wait on those. Okay. So it looks like we'll check them in during a caucus and
okay.
Hopefully we can get those on everybody's
yeah,
schedule.
Yeah, I think there's a couple. It runs us through a couple of months in the summer.
Yeah, it'll run us through the beginning of fall semester.
Yeah.
Until the fall semester. Okay, good.
Good.
Okay, so that was the first item. The second item was to inquire about any counterproposal from our demand for impact bargaining?
Okay, and we have a, I guess we have a process question, and then I think Sherry, you have a couple questions
yeah.
about this document that was presented that we just need some clarification on, and I guess our process question is this: very often, I think typically. When someone asks for impact bargaining, it's kind of handled separate from contract bargaining. We were wondering how you wanted to handle that. Did you want to set up a separate meeting to do impact bargaining, or do you want to talk about it in the context of one of the regular sessions?
Well, we were planning, since we already had the dates, you know, a couple of dates set, we might as well take advantage of those and, you know, take half hour or whatever time we need to go through that.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, if it becomes necessary to schedule an additional session, we'll not, you know,
okay.
Obviously we're not going to be opposed to that. We thought since we got these 3-hour blocks
yeah.
and we might as well take advantage of them.
Yeah. And, you know, because impact bargaining sometimes occurs mid-contract.
Right. Yeah, it could be totally out of cycle.
It could be completely out of cycle.
Yeah.
All right. Did you want to go into this now, Sherry, and ask a couple questions?
We can. We had a couple of questions that came up when I was talking to other people in the university who would be responsible for some of this. We were unclear what number three meant. The university should make available promptly advertise one-on-one web courses at UCF Technical Assistance on each. Is that different from number one? Is that just the notification that number one is occurring, or is that something different?
No, I think it's something different. So number one is an effort to organize training sessions, so you get large blocks of faculty trained at one time, in an effort to get this kicked off and to be as efficient as we can. Whereas number three is about making it known that there's assistance available for one-to-one consultations, because there'll be things that might not be discussed at a session, where there's the faculty members start trying to create their web courses and maintain it, and things, all of a sudden they're running into roadblocks or glitches or something like that, and then they need to have some technical support. And so that's what we're thinking about there.
Okay.
And to be totally honest about it, I didn't realize that was available for me, or I would have taken advantage of it last summer if I'd known. I had no idea.
Okay. So is that then similar to number six? Because I'm just trying to...
Yeah, number three and number six, I think, could be combined.
Yeah, tangible,
yeah. It's making that available and advertising it, and then having the support available. So if, as we're all trying to get our work done, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, we suddenly realize that, oh, no, now this isn't doing what I thought it was going to do, right before we have to go down to class or give some intermediate report to the students, to have that support available.
Okay, and number five, it wasn't clear to us who these people were supposed to be. So employees who are responsible for processing grade changes and who are assigned grade-changing duties. I mean, I don't think we have people who are... That's what their job is, to do grade changes?
Yeah.
I thought faculty made their own grade changes, but no?
No, not necessarily. So in some courses, especially big courses like Intro Bio, we have someone who's a course coordinators or something like that. And so a lot of the paperwork flow and grade changes and appeals and all those things flow through that person. So they could literally be responsible for, thousands of grades in a semester. And so the concern is that as we try to implement using web courses throughout, that especially in the early days, there's going to be a lot of mistakes. And then folks are going to have to go and individually submit those grade change requests. And you can just imagine that, a systematic mistake in how you've set things up to calculate, or something that you didn't foresee that the computer was doing in the background, you could have hundreds of those. So it's going to be a lot of additional work for certain people, beyond what they're already doing.
All right, so these are like course coordinators?
Course coordinators, lab coordinators in some cases.
Essentially all the things we talked about at 20 through 12 last week.
Yeah. Yeah, the different groups have administrative duties, whether they're formally written in their assigned duties or not. Right, but we're not. We're not bargaining for staff.
So these are like faculty people, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
director under that program.
Okay. All right, well, that's helpful. So we can go back to our people and talk about that. As a preliminary matter, and we did not provide a counter-proposal immediately because we still had some questions, our group, the administration, is willing to commit to making the training available, number one. They are 3 and 6. We can do some of that. We do not have the manpower or the budget to do 24 hours, 7 days a week. We do 7 days a week currently, but we do like 3 hours on a Saturday and 3 hours on a Sunday and a couple of hours at night. Mm-hmm. I talked to Tom Cavanaugh. They can extend those hours to some extent and evenings and weekends, but we just don't have the budget or the personnel. We can't hire the personnel to do it 24/7. So we will expand what we're willing to do, and we can flesh that out more in a counter proposal. But it's not going to be 24/7. And of course, we will prominently advertise and what we're providing when it's available.
I'm sure. Could you just tell me again how much they do on evenings and weekends now?
I know they do. I think it's 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours on Saturday and Sunday, and it's a couple of extra hours at night, but I don't know how much. So we can expand that to some degree. We're willing to put off the beginning of the implementation date until 2019, 2020, but not go to all the way to 2021. This is a high priority for Provost. The annual evaluation, we get the concern there with the SPIs, especially because some of the AESPs rely so heavily on those, which I wish they didn't, but there's...
Well, we can negotiate that. Yeah. It's coming up.
I'm happy to do it. Don't get into bargaining at this point on that article yet. But
that's okay, but the message, let's say, was warmly received. Or the potential message.
Tell them what you told me, about why this is difficult.
Oh, on the SPIs, there could be very stark differences between some of the positive ones, some of the negative ones, and it's not, right now there's no way that I'm aware of that we can separate the bubble scores from the comments. So if we decide that there's a malcontent based on comments that we would want to somehow exclude, there's no way to get rid of the bubble scores on those. So we can't get rid of the entire evaluation.
Because they're not correlated, right?
Well, the bubbles are tallied.
Right.
And then the comments are just reproduced for the faculty member. But there's not a linkage. So if there's somebody that's bellyaching about a grade change or whatever the case may be, I don't know how to separate that.
Now, I think what we would consider is looking at over a period, let's take a snapshot of the last 3 years of somebody's evaluations, and if they've been getting consistently positive scores, or and all of a sudden, once we start with this, their scores just precipitously drop off, that we might look at that and say, okay, there's something going on here, and it's probably... If they've been a consistently good teacher, people don't just usually have a big change because, unless there's some other cause for it. So we would be willing to look at it and say, okay, if there are outliers here and people just have then we certainly don't want to hold that against the faculty member. So we can find a way to capture that in a counterproposal language. That's kind of what we would want to do.
So who would make that decision? the chair, the who?
Well, I mean, it's a fairly, I don't know, we got to think about that, but I mean, the scores are what they are. I mean, when you look at your AESPs, everybody knows because what you're being evaluated on in those AE, and you get your SPOIs in most departments, you get them. So you know, you can look at what you've had for the last couple of years, and if all of a sudden you're dropping off, if the chair hasn't noticed it, you can certainly bring it to the chair's attention. So, I mean, I don't think that this is not difficult.
I think that's a good way to look at it, because anytime there's an evaluation done, an employee has an opportunity to respond and could say, hey, it appears that you didn't notice that there was this precipitous drop in my SPI. So.
And you have to do a FAR or something, and wouldn't you be able to bring that to the attention if your score suddenly dropped off? Or I don't know. I'm not a faculty member.
I don't know that every college has a place for comments on on the FAR results, but.
Okay. As you might expect, the places where we are least willing to work our money. We require people to do FERPA training. We require them to do all kinds of training. We don't pay them to do that. So I'm not expecting that we're... I mean, my conversations with the provost today were like, no, we're not paying for training. I'm assuming it's going to be CDL people who are going to be required to provide the training. Those are 12-month exempt employees. They're not really eligible for overtime for extra duties. Their work assignments would just be adjusted so that they would not be having to work huge amounts of overtime to do this.
Well, and of course, our concern is that those folks will see these duties added on to their current duties with no increase in the number of people employed to do the work. No decrease in the number, in their other responsibilities. So it's just adding on and adding on and adding on.
I get it.
And there is a limit to that. Even though folks are not getting overtime, they're also not required to work more than 40 hours a week, ordinarily. That's part of the contract.
This is true.
So what then happens when folks say, I'm already at my limit and I can't accept these additional responsibilities?
Then their assignment can be adjusted to take off some of the other responsibilities. I mean, if there's a real issue and it's documented, then we can talk about overload, but we're not going to just make an automatic, a blanket promise that we're going to give everybody overload who has to develop these new training.
And we're not even talking about overload. We just want the resources applied to get the job done. That's our first level concern.
It says shall receive overload compensation.
Right. So. Because we have a good inkling of how this will get rolled out. It will be added on top of what folks are already doing, and everybody here is strained. I mean, I had a comment from someone who said they felt like they were doing the work of three mules. You know, and when you get those sort of comments coming without any sort of prompting, you know you've got an issue.
Well, it's a university-wide issue.
Yeah, exactly.
At every level.
And that's why we intend to address it, just so you know what's coming.
Well,
the provost can draw his line and say we're not going to pay for it, but at some point you can't keep driving a mule. Eventually that mule is going to quit on you.
Well, all I can tell you is that we are not going to commit in advance to saying that we shall provide overload compensation if there's a demonstrative need at the time we start doing this, and that could be a provable need, then we'll consider it at that time. But that's where we are right now, and I'm not seeing a big change in that. I wasn't aware of what you were talking about on number five. As I said, that's something that is, I didn't know we had people like that. I don't know that 500 is something we would be willing to go to. I don't know what we'd be willing to do on that, so I'm going to have to get back to you on that because, that's just something I had no clue what we were talking about. So, but that is our initial, those are our initial thoughts on it, and I'll get back to you with further thoughts now that I have more of an idea of what we're talking about and an actual formal counter proposal.
Okay, so we can expect that on the May 3rd, the next time?
I'll try to get it to you by then. We have a
because
lot
it is impact bargaining, and the impact is going to be felt pretty soon, so
I
we need
know
to
it
accelerate
is, but
this.
We got a lot of changes happening right now at this university, as you may, as you are well aware. Everybody's scrambling.
Well, one of Albert Einstein's favorite sayings was when folks asked him how he solved a problem, he said he spent 90% of his time thinking about it, and then 10% of his time doing it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the opposite, which seems to happen here quite frequently. Things are rolled out, they're announced, and then there's folks don't have any clue how it's going to get implemented. And especially with something like grades, that they're going to affect our students. You know, they have the potential for really souring the classroom experience for a lot of our kids, and therefore for our folks who are instructing them. This really needs to be thought through carefully. Because, you know, there are ways that faculty interact with their students that, you know, it's subtle, you know, that folks on the outside might not even realize it's going on, where, yes, you could post your grades on web courses, and that might be what everybody does in high school and what everybody's used to, and maybe that's the easiest. But one of the other ways is to return it to them in class or have them come to your office and get it then so you can sit down and talk to them about it. And so that fosters that one-on-one interaction, which is where the best teaching happens. And so we want to make sure that we don't lose that. And especially, you know, folks who are teaching small courses or now they're going to have to do web courses for, you know, each independent study, each graduate student. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not efficient, and it's not strengthening the teaching opportunities. It's doing the opposite.
I can understand what you're talking about in terms of small classes. I have no dog in this hunt, and I don't teach. So, but when you're talking about giving out grades individually and having people come and talk to you about it and all of that, that sounds really good. But when you're talking about these huge classes, how do you do that?
Well, some of us suck it up and do it, and some other folks can't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the point is, it's the choice of the faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
So folks can decide that that's the way they want to do it because they see the dividends down the road, and other folks say that, well, there are other things I can do with my time that would better serve our students.
The provost's rationale for this is that he thinks it's going to promote student success because students will be able to track their progress as they go through a course and know exactly where they stand at all times. And I've had students actually tell me that it's very helpful to be able to do that.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
Could they differentiate between those small courses? Because I'm one of those people who teach the smaller courses, independent
mm-hmm.
studies, and I do have more of that one-on-one, and it would change my pedagogy, right? Because I'd have to now, just it seems so cold to put it on web courses, whereas before it's like they come and we talk about their paper and how to improve
mm-hmm.
it. And a lot of my students, there is student success. A lot of mine go to Harvard. One of them just won the Order of Pegasus. In the humanities.
Cool.
Yeah, so
congratulations.
I mean, yeah, so I think it's part of that, like having that one-on-one. So I'm one of the faculty who chooses these smallest courses. So I don't know if they could differentiate between, I understand why they might do it in the large courses, but between those smaller courses, like for independent studies or small courses, like less than 15 students.
I'll certainly ask.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing to be aware of is that there's a difference between students who tell you that they're having difficulty, that they can't tell you where they are as the course progresses, versus students who can't figure out where they are. And those are two different things. So, for example, in my syllabus, I use weighted averages. And weighted averages are things that are standard in the sciences and engineering. So if a student can't figure out a weighted average, that's a real problem for them going forward. But the problem is that all through high school, right, this stuff is all given to them. And so now they have to just do a simple calculation, a linear equation, and they can't do it. That's really bad. So we're enabling kids not to develop their skills. And that's a fundamental skill. I don't know when they do it in Florida. My son hasn't gotten there yet. But I imagine it's somewhere around the seventh grade.
I tell you, the two students that mentioned it to me said, well, the problem that they have is the faculty don't return papers in a very timely manner, mm-hmm. or quizzes. And so it, by the time they realize that they're having problems, they're well into the course. And I think that, you know, nobody's perfect. Faculty aren't perfect. We do have faculty who are maybe not the most conscientious about that. So, I mean, you know, there's always, there are permutations in all of these things.
Yeah. But this doesn't fix that problem. This adds an extra duty that the faculty member then has to do. It slows it down.
It's very obvious that that isn't being done in class. It's not
so this
obvious.
Is about surveillance.
No, it's not about surveillance.
No, that's what you just said. It's very obvious it's not being done. So that means that someone's going to be looking to see if it's being done.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's going to be sitting there looking at all these classes.
No, a computer algorithm does that. I could have one of my students could write that in probably 2 minutes. It's easy to write.
Yeah, I spoke completely off the top of my head on that.
Okay.
So
right.
I'm just saying that nobody has said that to me.
That's okay.
We also have faculty who will. I've heard they'll put in like a perfect 100% for every.
No.
They'll put in 100% for every item, grade item. And as they move through the course, they'll adjust those items that are coming through. And the reason they do that, and I have to send out, right now is around the time where I have to send out a message to students. Because say you have 30% final exam, 30% mini quizzes, 30% discussion, and 10% some other item. And you have the mini quizzes done and the discussions, the mini quizzes done, that's it. And then you get into your first discussion. They still have, 20% of discussion, the 30% of the final exam, and the 10% other item. What's showing on web courses at that point is the 30% for the mini quizzes, and then once they finish, say, one discussion, that one discussion, which is actually worth 10% of their grade, is actually showing as 30% of their grade. But it's not just showing as 30% of your grade, it's showing as 30% of 60%. So it's actually showing as 50% of your grade. And I have to send that message to students after the first discussion and say, I know your grade's about to fluctuate massively, but here's what your grade's actually worth, and here's what's happening in web courses. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues with the grade book as well and what students see. And so students are encouraged to enter in the potential grades in web courses to see what their grade would be. But the students who don't know to do that, I think, you're going to run into even more student emails who don't understand what's going on with the fluctuation, how grades are actually calculated in web courses.
Because it's not treating missing values appropriately.
Right.
Misrepresentation.
Yeah. No, it's...
If you have extra credit, then
it's what John said. I mean, 90%, it needs to be thought of 90%, and then the numbers. Not to say that it can't be done, but there's just so many factors.
A lot of factors. Get it. Okay, well.
Well, we'll look forward to a formal proposal next time, I guess, and then we can.
Now that I
because there are, it sounds like there are some points where.
Yeah, I think
we
there's
agree
some definite
to,
points of agreement.
Right, yeah. And so then we can try to narrow it. Right. I think it'd be hard for us right now to narrow it down further without
sure.
seeing
yeah,
the
Sherry,
formal.
Yeah, Sherry was giving you a preview of, our thought processes on at this point, and I'm sure as we go through the practice of drafting the more formal written, that'll flesh out in more detail.
Yeah, and it's, for us right now, we're in such flux because we've got all these interim people and trying to figure out who's going to make the, who to talk to and who has the help.
Well, to be honest, that's part of our rationale for wanting to say, okay, let's implement this full bore in 2020 rather than the year after next, because we're figuring, okay, this year is just, it's the university resettling itself and kind of, coming back out from 25 years of one person at the helm and everything that means,
yeah.
And then, having to shake things back out again. That's
Within this calendar year, I will have had, I suspect, because I think we'll probably have a full-time, a regular provost by the end of the year, I'll have worked for three different bosses.
I bet.
So
and tried to explain the same thing to the three different
I don't envy
with
your,
very different
your,
points of view on
I
it.
I don't envy your role.
So can we expect a counter proposal in writing?
Well, that's what you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What's next?
Well, since we went first, do you have anything that you want to put on the table before we start?
We'll wait and see what you've got.
You're going to pass?
We're going to pass.
Well, let's go back to the non-discrimination article, because I think we're pretty close to on that one.
That's good. So.
I'm just trying to think if I've got a copy for myself or not. I already punched in here. I think I do, but I'm not positive.
Did you pass any across yet?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
It's okay.
The wind up over there from both both routes. Oh, yeah.
You're quite right. Good idea.
If not, I'll come over.
Number three.
Yeah, number three. If not, I'll come over and find it for you.
Okay.
Sorry, dude. Here's another
We've
extra
got two things that look very different that both have the same
Okay, yeah, let me explain what's going on. As we were getting prepared, you caught us.
It's all right.
So we get to pick from A or B.
Well, actually, A and B are identical.
Oh, okay.
So
one just shows the changes.
Yeah, so Part A, the first two pages, or at least pages one and two that appear on the top there, are just the article without the track changes in.
Okay.
Mainly to show you that this is pretty short and pretty sweet, and we based a lot of our third proposal here on your previous proposal.
Okay.
And then the second grouping of three pages with the red, the color, is with all the track changes on it, so you can see the record of where we've been from status quo.
Okay.
And so, Giovanna, do you want to explain what the changes are?
So 8.1 policy, where I add pregnancy and parental status, the main reason for it is to match what we already received. Like, we just received this from the UCF HR. And they do, and I highlighted here where they do put pregnancy, so it is protected,
sure.
But the idea is to put this language also in our CBA to consolidate everything. So that's one reason it's there. I know it was not in your proposal. The other thing, too, similar to what the HR thing does, is it explains, and I do it in brief, it explains what is sexual harassment or discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I briefly do that on lines 30 through 35.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it is. The other thing, too, is I noticed you removed the policy number, so I just re-added the policy number. To USCF policy 2-004.1. So that's, you know, those things were added. We agreed with several things that, you know, removing. A lot of excess language. And what else? Oh, adding retaliation in lines 87 through 88 to match what it says on lines 74 and 75, but also in the HR document talks in that, the sense of retaliation as well. And then the last piece is 8.3, lines 105 through 109. And this is in speaking with our grievance chair and also our Title IX expert, Jan Sandoval. The employees complaining of violations of this article may present it to OIE and explain also the investigatory arm that determines whether there has been discrimination or makes recommendations. And we used your language, employees, or at least the concept of it, and employees may also grieve violations of this article. And we are in the process, we haven't presented Article 20 yet. Right, John?
Right, not yet.
Yeah,
that's coming soon.
That's coming soon, and we're going to do some minor changes to the grievance procedure. So, yeah.
That will speak to that.
That will speak to that, yeah.
Okay. We'll have to talk about it, but we're definitely closer.
Are there any questions that
question.
We could.
Did you want a copy of this?
Help you out, Ryan?
We have it. And I'm sure you all know that, you know, recently Trump revoked the fair pay and safe workplaces, so we can't trust our federal government anymore. So a non-discrimination article is important.
Now, is the language in 8.1b1, is that reflective of UCF policy 2-004?
Yes, I used it straight out of the student policy.
Okay, so like the term microaggressions would be in the policy.
I think I saw that in there, yes.
Okay.
Graphic or written statements. Actually, the policy actually helped me think of this much more broadly.
Okay.
I think especially if you read it without the changes,
mm-hmm. No,
you know, it sort of flows and you start nodding your head, yeah, this is what we do and this makes sense. So that's why we included it without the track changes. Plus we felt like we were getting close.
Mm-hmm.
And we could always just pull that out and TA it.
Now.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes.
Now.
You and I are optimists.
Let me ask a question about language that I think is already in 's already in the contract, but just so that we have a common understanding of it. There's a sentence in section 8.1d that says
D
is in David. It says no employee investigated under such procedure shall be disciplined until such investigation is complete and a finding of discrimination has been issued. And just to be clear, that would mean that we would not discipline someone for violating our policy on discrimination while that investigation is going on, but we can discipline them for something else.
So that's status quo language because it was in yours.
Yeah, I just want to be clear about that because I don't want somebody to read that to say all discipline shuts down during the investigation.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the intent of the under such procedures.
Under such procedures.
Yeah, I think so too, but I just want to be clear about that.
Yeah, because, because then it repeats until such investigation.
Yeah.
So it's referring back to the.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because someone could engage in conduct that could be both potentially subject to discipline because of its discrimination nature, but it could also violate other codes of conduct. It could be an act of violence, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or financial malfeasance or
exactly.
Something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could also need to understand this totally thinking, apparently, somebody who's committed both discrimination and sexual harassment is about to be disciplined on one, commits an act of discrimination in order to protect themselves against penalty for...
Right.
The such wouldn't necessarily outrule that, although it really would be...
Yeah. I'm just saying the language is... The way the language is written, someone might someday make the argument that it does... foreclose any disciplinary action for any cause while an investigation is ongoing, which clearly doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. I'm betting that that's blue book language.
I bet it is blue book language, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all understand it, so.
Sorry, can I ask about the language now? This only applies to finding a discrimination, not a retaliation, harassment, or any other violation.
I think since we haven't agreed to adopt the revised language with retaliation being added, but whatever if we were to do that, I think your point is well made that it should agree with how it's described in other parts of the article. Mm-hmm. Well, before we take a caucus, do you want to give us anything else, John?
Yes, we do, but we're certainly open to making that sentence on 81A2 very clear. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So that.
Sure.
I think we all know the consequences of universities ignoring
well, we
this sort of
yeah.
thing in
yes.
the past,
like,
and we don't
yeah.
want
doesn't,
to
so, yeah.
fall into that category. Okay, so we've got this is the promotion article.
Oh,
and
good. We were hoping for that.
Yep, yeah, and we only did one copy of each in all its glory of track changes in color.
Okay.
Wow.
But we can also call it up.
Is that? You want to get one?
Well, we didn't really revamp it. What we did is imported things again. So it's an importation. So everything's in one place.
Yes.
And because this one is really important to folks. It's probably just look right on the front page. No, it's just look on the top of there.
Okay.
That disc.
Here, I'll put back over to the computer.
Okay.
Strawberry arctic. I can tell. You know what that? Did you ever see? You probably in that song. Did you ever watch I Love Lucy? Because you're Canadian, you might not.
Yes.
Did you ever
when
see
I was a little kid.
New Zealand.
Did you ever see that? The Vitamita Benjamin.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And when she first takes it, and it's obviously just god awful, and she goes, "Ooh, and it's so tasty too." And the expression on her face, which I could never duplicate, is so. That's kind of what you remind me of. It's tasty. Mm-hmm. Vitamita Benjamin.
And then she gets so drunk by the end of it.
Yeah.
Okay, John, do you want to take over on this one?
Sure.
Since you assembled the.
Sure. So this one is just going to be the simple markup because there's a lot of red on this one as you can see. So for instance, for the definition, we're proposing just a new definition of what promotion is. We've added based off of what is in Index A in the back of the book the titles of ranks that are eligible for promotion. So it's just a definition of what ranks are eligible for promotion. So no new titles have been added. Those are just a subset of what's available in Appendix A. With B, for instance, this language is taken from the regulation regarding promotion of of tenure and tenure earning. So a lot of it may look very, very, very familiar. In terms of the policies, so on and so forth, we kind of broke out the regulation and put in the policies. A and B are straight from the regulation. We're proposing minor changes to policies, but I think the spirit of this is to just kind of show these are all the applicable policies regarding regarding promotion for tenure and tenure earning members. One change we did make that I just wanted to point out is different from the regulations. It's 14.3I. An employee is immediately eligible to apply the next cycle or the regulation denies that. So we're proposing different language there.
Thank you for pointing it out. It would be helpful in the future if you've made a change to something that is, you know, already indicate what you have changed from regulations, so otherwise we're going to have to go through and compare function to regulation. Okay.
Yeah, we'll try to do that. It gets difficult when we're importing lots of things in.
Just different color ink, but, you know.
Well, there is one point on line 78 right below there,
mm-hmm.
where we inserted a clarification so that what we're thinking of is someone who comes on a tenure track line and they're getting credit for prior service somewhere else, and the years of that prior service also get evaluated, and that's common practice, but it wasn't captured in the current documents.
The other is proposing that the Office of Faculty Excellence maintain the promotion schedule, which they already do, and then clearly defining when it's available, which is posted on there. It's the same dates that are available on the website right now. So it's importing current practice into the contract. And also the deadlines for applying for the intent to apply. And then also the notification is still in the April, the second Wednesday of April as defined currently on the Faculty Excellence website. So we're not proposing any changes to the current process, just clearly defining, very similar to what is done in Article 23 with the awards, very similar language. And then P, the last item of that particular section, is status quo language regarding titles with lecturers.
Okay.
The CPE is status quo language.
With the exception of what's on lines 100 to 101?
Yeah, the blue.
Yeah, the blue. Because it was pointed out to us that, incredibly, some departments don't evaluate progress on the CPE using the metrics that are provided in the department, college, and university criteria. We were surprised. Well, once we were made aware of that, then we were less surprised. But this will help provide guidance to departments about what the intent was all along, which is this is a cumulative evaluation, and it should be evaluated based on the criteria
mm-hmm.
for promotion and tenure, which is what it's designed to do.
And then going down to section 14.5, this is new language based off of the ASP creation process. Because there is no current language on how to actually develop department criteria and college criteria. And the purpose of this is, as you well stated, that the university is in flux. Departments and colleges have been created and reorganized. So this puts into the contract a standard process across the university for how to develop it. Based off of what is current practice with the SB process. There is, regardless, or to the SB process as well, the one change that we are proposing is that that failure to come to an agreement means all parties have to come to an agreement. So the process would start again if not all parties along the from the department to the college, to the dean, the department chair and then onto the provost? Or does it need, if there's not agreement, then it must start again until there is agreement? And then also putting in a process for reviewing the criteria, both at the department and the college level. Similar.
So all of this department, college, the creation, this is all AESP language, or process?
Process, yes.
Mm-hmm. With the exception that he noted?
Yeah.
Again, yeah, because that was something that most departments have just been through, so they're familiar with it, and we've seemed to have ironed out the kinks pretty well. I think a lot of departments have been through, I think, two iterations now.
Mm-hmm.
And the process itself seems to be working okay. It's kind of the details that sometimes departments are struggling with. But the higher level process seems to work pretty well.
Yeah. Very similar to the, under the 14.7A, the last sentence, just as where we are right now with reorganization of the institution, if there is reorganization, then the college guidelines or department guidelines need to be reviewed, and that provides a mechanism to start that process. The university criterion 14.8 is language directly from the promotion of tenure and tenure earning faculty.
And you can see
the regulation you're talking about?
Yes. That is verbatim.
Yeah, the only places where a minor change was made was on lines 157 and 158 to make it a more positive statement instead of having the dual negatives.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Then 14.9A is status quo language. And then B is the effect on employees. So for instance, if there is an update, then the faculty member gets to choose what are they're evaluated under the current guidelines, unless this faculty member specifically states that they want to be evaluated under the new guidelines, if they have at least 3 years of tenure or service. Then the promotion for tenure and tenure earning employees, most of this language was pulled directly from the regulations. And John, please chime in when we made minor changes.
Yeah, the only, as far as say only, let me look ahead.
I think there was one on the.
Yeah, the only substantive change is actually on lines 253 to 257. And has to do with external research funding.
Mm-hmm.
So the current regulation restricts the accounting of research funding to only contracts and grants that get processed through the university or one of its service organizations or partners, formal partners, I guess. And so we're suggesting that there are lots of cases where faculty are engaged in research with other entities, where the money flow doesn't come through the university, and so therefore there's no accounting of it, but that those are equally legitimate research grants. So the faculty member is contributing ideas and intellectual content to those proposals, say for governmental agencies and things like that, and they may be listed even as a co-PI, but because there's no subcontract to UCF or any sort of other university obligation other than the faculty members' participation, that needs to be recognized. And it's the same thing as if you're publishing a paper or something like that. you know, we're not just accounting for papers that get published by UCF Press or some in-house organization. It's all the publications that you have. And so that should be the same for the research that underlies that as well.
But I think I'm getting confused, because one thing is publications, another thing is funding. This is, I thought this was talking about, it says in terms of documentation, external research funding. So maybe there's something that's not well documented at the university in terms of funding, but any publications that resulted from it would still appear on a CV, still appear on an annual report.
Right.
Still be counted.
Right. It's accounted for there, but also should be accounted for in the research as well, because that research is what's underlying those publications. See what I'm saying? That needs to be consistent with the two. So you could have external research funding that you're contributing to, but where the money doesn't come through UCF. And so there's no mechanism for that being accounted for.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, I was just going to offer an example because I have one from my own experience. So, so this would be a really common one. So I often partner with NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, people in their National Ocean Service to do coral reef research. And so NOAA usually will cover my airfare and per diem and things like that. And there's no... there's no monies that come through UCF for that. So even though we develop the proposals together and I'm listed as often as a co-PI or something like that, there's no, it's internal funds that they get, or there's no way for it to be accounted for at the UCF level.
Well, thank you for the example.
I think there would be a lot of things like that with contracts, mostly with agencies, but it could be nonprofits. That would be pretty common.
Another example is if I have an international collaborator in Switzerland, and so we got a Swiss National Science Foundation, but I'm not a Swiss citizen, she is, so she gets all that credit, and I get funds to do my research, but I don't get any, like, UCF credit. None of that money goes through UCF. So that particular grant pays for, like, the research we're going to do and the workshop that we're organizing and all that, but nothing goes through UCF.
Yeah, and even like our travel forms have a slot for recheckoff where funding is provided by another agency. That would be like the only place where something like that might ever appear. And it's just kind of that other category. It's more of an explanation of, okay, why are you not requesting or have an account that you're requesting to be reimbursed from? Well, it's because it's being done totally externally by some other entity.
Another one, the smaller grants that go through National Endowment for the Humanities, like the summer stipend and the summer seminar.
Okay.
So we're mainly just trying to capture a slice of activity that's currently being excluded, kind of it's inconsistent with what you're doing in the other areas and publication and service and whatnot, but there's no way to capture it right now. And so it's just making sure that's not excluded just for the sole fact that ORC doesn't know about it.
So the process, the procedural process, both at the department, college, university level, and the final decision for promotion of tenure and tenure earning faculty is the same as stated in the regulation.
And you'll see a lot of repetition of language, and we can probably condense this quite a bit by just referencing, you know, the college follows the same procedure as the departments, except for these things and so on, and so we can collapse that down. But mostly we wanted you to see that, okay, this is it taken directly.
Then if we go down to 14.6, which is line 589, this is promotion procedures for non-tenure earning employees. So this covers both myself and my colleagues in the room in terms of, so what we're proposing is a very simple process, and it doesn't follow the current process, which is based off of the tenure laws. We have the ASP, we have the criteria. A lot of our department criteria and college criteria match what our job responsibilities are. So for the non-tenure earning employees, instructors, lecturers, instructional designers, and librarians, is to basically go off of your performance with your ASPs. And then your promotion would be granted based off of your evaluation without having to put together a dossier.
So what we're suggesting would be appropriate is that a non-tenure earning employee should be promoted to the next rank if they've completed 3 years of continuous service here at UCF. And in all three of those years, they've gotten overall annual evaluations of outstanding. So they've outstanding 3 years in a row. They're at the very top of their craft. And because we now have, you know, the AESPs that are very rigorous, and we've gone through a couple of iterations of those, now we've got things everybody agrees on. This is what it takes to be outstanding. If folks are doing that repeatedly, then it's evident that they should be promoted. If they've got 4 years of continuous service and they get three overall evaluations of above satisfactory or outstanding, that should also be worthy of being promoted. And so the idea there is that someone coming in, you know, especially if they're coming in from non-academia or something like that, it may take them a year or so to adjust, you know, and to figure out the quirks of UCF and our students, among other things. You know, everybody has to learn their audience, right, and try to figure out how they balance their workload and how they become effective. And so that gives folks a little bit of a grace period to get that understanding. And, you know, if they can go right away up to that above satisfactory or outstanding level, then clearly they've mastered that.
Can I give an example on this one? I'm a little confused looking at the language. If I came in and in one of these roles and got above satisfactory my first year, then two outstandings, I don't qualify for the three-year promotion because I didn't have outstanding for 3 years.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. I get conditional in the fourth. I'm eligible for promotion. Mm-hmm. Because 3 out of the 4 years I had outstanding or above satisfactory.
Yeah, that's what it reads. That's what it reads. You're reading it right. That wasn't our intent, though. We weren't thinking about that possibility. We were thinking the opposite.
The intention is obviously to cut down redundancy.
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, non-tenure people who aren't doing outstanding work year in and year out, just to avoid, you know, again, it'll take away a committee, take away more, you know, putting together a package and those things that, you know, it really is just redundancy.
In terms of C of that section, this talks about when this takes effect. So for instance, you may have had somebody who's been in a position for a while, for some reason or another, did not want to go up for promotion, then they have achieved, they have met that criteria, then they should be promoted in the next academic semester, but they have a regular supplemental appointment. And then that kind of, that type of language is once again presented in 14.7, where the decision notification and effective dates, one of the current processes is were notified in April, however, we don't take effect until August, until the next contract year. So we're proposing that if you're if you've been promoted as a tenure earning, that it takes effect then in summer if they have an appointment. So it should be become, you've gotten the letter from the provost to the president saying that you've been promoted, so it should take effect whenever you have your next appointment. For some faculty, it may be August, but if you're teaching summer, you've already been officially promoted, you should have your new rank. And then for 12-month employees, it's basically the next of the succeeding academic semester. So for instance, that would be summer for 12-month employees.
On these promotions, if somebody were to be promoted in the summer, let's say for teaching class or their 12-month, or mm-hmm. in case maybe, when would the promotion raise take effect?
Somebody being promoted during the summer?
If your promotion became, I'll use you for example.
Yep.
Suppose your promotion became effective
right.
May 8th.
Correct.
When would the promotion raise go into effect?
Well, the, so for instance, the notification, so you're talking from the non-tenure perspective?
I'm talking you should about anybody.
Even a
nine-month faculty.
Because it would match up with the formula for summer. This summer pay.
It affects budgets in departments, what units we'd be able to offer in terms of teaching.
Right.
Things like that.
Well, I think in our contract, the academic semester is, it's fall and spring, right? And then summer's not.
Right.
Right? So we would have to make sure the language is consistent with that scheme then.
But this says supplemental appointment. So if somebody has a summer contract, mm-hmm. there's one thing that's using the title.
Right, so that's the 9 months. Yeah,
are you
nine
assuming
months.
That the mm-hmm. money comes at the same time as the title? That's the question.
Right. It changes the equation for summer pay.
It does.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Dramatically.
And that's the intent. Right. So if someone's promoted and that promotion takes effect on the last day of the spring semester or whatever, then the summer supplemental contract shouldn't be skipping that promotion increase. It shouldn't be taking effect on the next 9 months because the university is signing a contract with the person for that summer. It's a supplemental contract. So we shouldn't be skipping.
Right. Well, I understand what the intent is here because it's not mentioned here. 23 is where the salary is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see.
I'm trying to forecast.
Right. Yeah, no, okay. Well, I hope to bring you a 23 next time. And actually, while we're on that subject, since you just reminded me, Chuck, thanks, is there any interest in seeing a multi-year salary article?
No.
Okay.
Because I can tell you, I think you've already probably heard via the grapevine, if you don't know, we are not going to get performance money this year. Again, we're going to lose performance funding. We hope, again, hope springs eternal, that the next year or two we'll get back in the money. So, and we don't want to bind ourselves to something that could actually, God willing, and the bog doesn't change its mind about its criteria again. We'll actually be able to get back up into the top three.
Well, you know what the game they're playing is, right? It's like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
so they're going to construct things for UF and FSU to come out on top and USF to be right behind them.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is that Charlie Brown kicked the football twice in a row, and once it was UCF and once it was FAU. So now Lucy's gotten smarter. and so they're starting to put criteria that they know is going to produce the ranks the
well,
way that they want them to
that,
come out.
But they change the criteria you've already submitted your documentation. So
yeah. I'll give it to the Florida legislature. They're more persistent than others. South Carolina tried to do this when I was at the college in Charleston. And the metrics they put in, they didn't do their homework. And so and they did a sort of winner-take-all scenario. So whoever had the best metrics got all the funding. Well, the college of Charleston swept every single metric.
And then they realized they had a problem because that meant the College of Charleston was getting all the money and every other institution in the state, including Clemson and the University of South Carolina, was going to get nothing. So they just abolished the whole system. They didn't take a risk with Charlie Brown out on the coast kicking the football again. No, they're persistent. I'll give them that.
How much of the budget is the performance funding? Is that like a tiny bit on top or like a major chunk?
It's a major chunk.
Well, thanks. That helps us know what we should be presenting. Because there's no sense in us giving you a proposal that's...
We would love to do a multi-year, but you know, when you keep... When football yanked up front of you, it's a little difficult to do that.
Yeah, it's difficult to predict. New money.
Yeah. So
the variance isn't that high, but we'll wait till next time to show that to you.
Okay. We have a lot to look at here.
Do we have anything else that we need to show them with this particular article?
No.
All right.
Do you have anything for us to consider while you're headed off
you
the caucus?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. I didn't want you to come back, but since you're here, you can explain 22.
Well, we can do that.
I think Dr. Riley can, too.
The ranking thing is what I wasn't real clear on, so.
Did I give you... Do you need some, Sherry?
Yeah. So you presented what it was essentially a status quo to us last time, and I think we are close on this one. So I'm hoping, just like you think we're close on discrimination, and I think we are closer, that this we of course adopted your numbers dropouts. We 22.1C, that one. No, 22.1C1. The intent of this, I think, was always that you had to have tenure before you were able to go on a sabbatical. But the language was apparently a little iffy because we had a situation where someone, at the time of their application, because the application for sabbatical comes before the notification of received tenure, so someone said, well, I've put in my tenure packet. I've gotten, you know, unanimous approval all the way up the line, but the provost just hasn't weighed in on it yet, so I should be able to go ahead and get the sabbatical, even though I'm not tenured. And if for some reason I don't get tenure, well, you can just bump it to the next person. But if you dealt with sabbaticals, that's not really how it works. It's kind of tricky to do that. So we just wanted to clarify that you had to be tenured at the time of the application.
But it's not the intent.
It's our intent.
Right, it's your intent, but that is not the intent. Because the very word sabbatical means in the seventh year, and this change will make that not be true. It will be in the eighth year for new hires. And every other university that we looked at in the state of Florida has the similar language to what we do, and they... they say that folks apply, and if they're granted tenure in that next semester, they get the sabbatical. And that's what's done, as far as I know, at every other university in the country. Sabbatical comes from the word Sabbath. It means in the seventh year. This pushes it to the eighth year. That is not a wise maneuver. You're now going to have new faculty. We're going to try to recruit, and they're not going to be eligible for a sabbatical till their eighth year. That's a marketing disaster.
Thank you for the linguistics lesson.
Well, it's literally what it means. That's where it came from.
something to consider.
You know, and sabbaticals were originated, I think, at Harvard in the 1880s, and they've since swept through the whole country. There's a reason why those things exist.
Wanting people, giving people sabbaticals, John.
But it's pushing it off a full year to the folks who are going to most benefit, and who then, if they stay at UCF, are going to most benefit the university. That makes no sense.
Because it would be good that one great case would have not get.
Yeah.
Well, we
and you've got a list.
We understand we understand your concern, John.
Okay.
Anything else that you want to point out, Sherry?
Charlie, will you go through application selection changes in 7?
Which, darn it, I didn't line these. I'm sorry. So yeah. You're talking about page 122.1E7? Is that what you're saying?
Okay, go slow. 22.1E7.
Yeah, so
okay,
the first
it's
page.
Okay, got
I
it.
Got it.
Okay.
I don't know that it's just a clarification of the language, isn't it, Chuck? Did you?
I was so happy to see you.
Okay. I'm thinking to myself that it's not really different. So what I think we wanted to make clear is when you receive the sabbatical applications, the committee has two charges. The first charge being to decide which sabbaticals are worthy of being awarded one if they had a million sabbatical to award. That was the yes pile. And the no pile is even if we had 10,000 sabbaticals, we wouldn't give it to you. That, you know, drinking Mai Tais on the beach is not a good sabbatical. We had a name for them at one time. I can't remember. We call them Chinese food application or something, where you just like eat Chinese food on the beach and you didn't actually do anything. So that there's a yes and no pile. After that, the no pile is no longer considered. Now you take the yes pile and then you rank those. So you're not attempting to rank the no's at all. They're not 9, 10, and 11 out of your group. They are no, and then the rest is a rank list. And that way it helps the dean later, like if someone says, no, I can't take the sabbatical, or my Fulbright fell through, or something else, then you go to the next person on the ranked list and inform them of the good news. I think that's what it intends to put into words what our practice is.
Could
Does
I
that
offer
make sense?
A friendly
Please.
Change? If we changed remaining to
yeah,
worthy.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't.
Yeah, it says worthy. Did you want to
no,
change it to
No, in eight it says remaining.
Ah, I guess that means that, exactly, in ranking
okay.
the worthy, which is the remaining in my mind, but yes, right.
That's what.
Okay,
because
I was about to get confused, so
no, yeah.
Thank you.
Stop that right now. Don't be confused.
That's what I couldn't explain either. I knew what you were going for, but the remaining is what threw me.
I didn't
seven.
Know. Well, you told me to focus on 7. I looked at 7. 7 is
Sorry.
Fine.
Okay.
So I'm not... Okay.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I thought that was what the original language said.
Well, I think what was happening is that the ranked list of recommended employees, the deans, were confusing some committee members. And so they want really clear direction on what to do, make a yay or a nay pile, and then rank the yay pile. That's what that's intended to do.
Right, I think that was our intention all along.
It
but
was.
If it makes it easier.
Yeah, but people weren't doing
some
it that way.
Some committees were ranking the no's, which mm-hmm. means that if you got to them then and they were supposed to be a no, then they would get a... You see what I mean? Like, if
right.
you're ranking them, then they would be in the yes pile. So that's what we were trying to help
yeah.
them streamline the practice when you're actually sitting at the table looking at the applications.
Yeah, the only rationale I could come up with for ranking the no pile is if someone's close and they just have some... quirk in their application, they forgot something or didn't address some key component. It would be kind of nice to know that, but I mean, a no is a no, and mm-hmm. presumably the committee can send feedback through the dean to
yeah.
Unworthy
member. Yeah, that do they need to follow the guidelines more carefully or think through
yeah.
what a sabbatical means.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask a question about the blue material just above it, just
sure.
to make sure I understand what's being said. So, activities to be performed while on sabbatical shall equate to the FTE requested. But isn't the FTE requested always 1.0?
Yeah,
1.0. Well, some sabbaticals are fall and spring,
0.75. Yeah.
Now
I'm really confused.
1.0, 2 semesters at 0.75.
No, but that's the pay as opposed to the FTE.
No. It's
yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's full pay for 1 semester, 3/4 pay for 2.
If you win the 1 competitive one.
Right.
I mean, you can work at 1.0 for 2 semesters. I don't think we're going to complain about that.
But I think that's what people do.
It may be. But the FTE, when you're talking about evaluation of whether or not they completed their project, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the...
If that's what they already do, then there's...
Not the way done at the end, right?
Huh?
You're talking about what I proposed to do, not what I did, in fact, achieve.
Right.
What you propose to do is in the two-page sabbatical application.
I propose to write
application.
This book while on sabbatical, and somebody decides, right. Yes, that's worth at least 0.75 FTE or whatever.
That's all you're evaluated on.
Can you repeat that, Mason? We just
so it sounded like Charlie was talking about evaluating in retrospect how much I got done as opposed to evaluating the proposal for what I intend to do.
Okay, so the proposal is different than what you actually perform.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
well, but that gets evaluated on the annual evaluation. Then.
Yeah.
Right.
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 I don't know. I'm just having trouble.
Well, I just had a sabbatical, 2 years ago, and I proposed to write a book, and I was getting 100% FTE for that semester.
One semester.
Right. It wasn't about service or teaching,
right.
Just to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you had 1.0, so that you had a 1.0 FTE.
Right, for the poll, right.
Right.
Okay, I think I get it. Maybe Lee can help me understand it.
I think of it as guidance to someone who's writing up their two-page proposal that they have to explain. Sometimes if you're selling your proposal, you say, okay, these are the activities I'm going to do, and it equates to that balance of I'm going to be writing this book. It's going to take my full time for this entire semester. It's 1.0. You see what I'm saying? For two semesters, it's giving guidance to the people that are putting this together. Does that help?
Yes, that helps, Charlie. Thank you.
Okay, mm-hmm. You're welcome. Never had a sabbatical. I don't think it's on the plan. You're welcome.
Well, you can't get one. You'd have to get a PD, professional development leave.
I need 8 years to get my tenure figured out.
You've been here longer than that, haven't you?
Don't you think that's bad, that you?
Oh.
But I appreciate your thought.
Yeah, I need to
regroup.
Sorry.
We need it.
Well, and upon that, we need to take a caucus.
I didn't realize that was a joke, Charlie. I'm sorry.
How long are you caucusing?
Are the numbers going? And you're golden. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I told you so, Charlie.
Huh?
I told you so.
John's making me feel better, like I have worth, even though.
You know, there's a really
I'm teasing Chuck.
you know,
but through you.
There's a really neat thing that that Tallahassee has. It's this weekend. And it's fourth season, but it's called Word of the South, and they have musical performers and writers like on five different stages in the same venue, so you can walk around and see, and they are all day long, and they have some really great talent that come into town. But the theme is supposed to be, it started off being like the literature and music of the South, but they've lost that long time ago, you know. They have all sorts of people that are not, you know, even international. But it's this weekend. It's a really cool thing.
Oh, nice.
I don't know what made me think of that, but thought I'd...
You thought you'd put that on the record.
I'd put that on the record. Actually, yeah. Actually, I did that because... I did that because on my legal pad, I wrote down what I... Because on my legal pad, I wrote down what I get because I'm the sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving me a... And part of it, one of it is a Southern Fried brunch on Sunday with free champagne. So there you go.
That's an interesting... could be an interesting combination.
I think it's probably, you know, in Tallahassee... I don't know if it's big here, but Tallahassee, Chicken and Waffles is big.
Oh, yeah, Chicken and Waffles is big...
Chicken and waffles is a big brunch item. Yeah, I'm sure that's what that is going to be.
Interesting.
I have never eaten it, but I know it's on the.
It's very good.
Diner place. What's the name of that?
Breakfast.
It's the diner. They have it on there.
I had the vegan version of that at Coco a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Because my brother and his family were here, and they're all vegan, so.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. My sentiments, exactly. Okay, so, yes, thank you. So the first thing that we wanted to do, more housekeeping.
Okay.
So, Charlie, the dates that you sent us?
Yes.
They work for us.
And?
Yeah,
you could. Mr. Matamor indicated.
They're good for me.
They are also good for him, so I am looking for rooms tomorrow, probably.
Okay,
and
good.
And we will, you gave me these blocks, and I'm like, okay, good, there's more times. Wait, what's going on? Not this time, but this.
I'm sorry.
But I think that's okay. I think I managed to work around your big block of time in June, Sherry's block of time in June. So I think we've got it set.
Well, thank you. That was.
I got lucky this time around.
That's good. Well, you guys took the longest. Is there something you want to give us?
Well, we looked at all of this, and I think that we need to.
The promotion is going to take a while.
The promotion is pretty dense.
Oh. Well, most of it's regulations, but I think there are some. You'll see when you get in, the later parts are repetitive, and we can probably winnow that down into a much more succinct statement, but at least for the first pass, so you can see where everything is.
There's a lot of language to try to...
Yeah, and a lot of new stuff for the non-tenured faculty. That's
a change.
Yeah.
Big change, yeah. So we'll have to work through that pretty carefully.
Did someone give you the recording from last time?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so you have a way to transmit these articles, or you can do it later, of course, since you have not.
Yeah, I can.
I was thinking I had to get them tonight, but of course I don't. You can email them on Saturday.
Yeah, we've got 3 weeks now. We got a little breather to play catch up. Because we both have a lot of.
Yeah, but I like to post them right away in case anyone's looking.
I'll try to give it to you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
And there's some new language and concepts that we see in 8 that we need to.
Yeah.
Talk about.
Some stuff I couldn't find in the policy, so I want to make sure that I want to track that and make sure it's there. I mean, not that I think you're trying to deceive us. I just want to.
There is some stuff. There is some verbiage that is outside of.
Okay, I thought so. So
yes.
That's what, yeah. And
in, in 8 or in 14?
In 8.
In 14.
You're
talking about 8.
Oh, sorry. No, that's.
Oh, you're talking about
the
non-discrimination.
Sorry, Sherry, I thought you were looking at me.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, say it again, Tony.
I said there was some stuff in 8.1B1. I couldn't find all of that language in 2.2-0041, so I want to look at it again.
Be careful
about that.
Okay.
And we're still grappling with the parental status thing, so I'm going to check and see how that.
How do you guys feel about pregnancy?
Pregnancy, well, it's federal law.
So yeah, pregnancy is good.
To be
okay. Right. Yeah, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. So
for multiple reasons.
Well, we have a pregnancy.
That's what I'm glad for. It.
We're on leave benefits, so it's kind of hard. So
we've got a proposal for Article 22, the sabbatical one, for you. And so one of the changes that we're going to suggest is instead of having
we've just written down on a
piece of paper, basically. Okay. So it's going to be 22.1 E7.
Got it.
Are you going to have a handout or something?
Yeah, I'm going to give you this.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Instead of saying applicants that are deemed worthy of, any applications that are recommended for, and then just to repeat that in number 8 that follows it.
In ranking like the recommended?
Exactly.
Okay.
The other changes that you marked on your version are fine with us, except for 22.1C1, where the status quo language is what we would propose. And so I'll give you this copy so you can see.
Thank you, John.
We've got things written.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe we can figure out a way to capture some of what is bothering you and us in C1 and with some different language. We'll have to look at that and see.
Okay. We look forward to that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got we've got a couple of things to respond to, and you've got a lot of things from us to respond to.
No, it's that's why. So we got 3 weeks. So it's catch up time.
I'm gonna say you keep putting new stuff on the table. Okay, so we will see y'all in 3 weeks.
All right.
All right. So. Think we're good till next time.
Good.
Thanks.